arrest you and do a full-blown search. And so Justice Sotomayor really took on Justice Thomas's majority opinion.
And we're going to leave it there right now, but we're going to continue the conversation post-show and post it online at democracynow.org. Doug Colbert, professor at the University of Maryland School of Law, and Joshua Harris, Baltimore's Green Party candidate for mayor. Thanks so much both for joining us. I'll be speaking Saturday at the WAM NYC Gender, Justice, and Media Conference at Barnard College at 4 p.m. Check democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Has two job openings, news producer and senior video producer. Check Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO Portland. The time is 4:59 p.m. And coming up next is your KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Extreme Amateur Game Scooter Competition, Round 1, Sunday, June 26th at D Block Indoor Skate Park in Clackamas. This is Round 1 in the 6th competition of the Mad Row Extreme Amateur Games. Winners are allowed to compete in the following competitions and in the final. Again, that's Extreme Amateur Game Scooter Competition, Round 1, Sunday, June 26th, at D Block Indoor Skate Park, 8921 Southeast Jansen Road in Clackamas. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 24th Annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Festival, a three-day event starting on Friday, June 24th through Sunday, June 26th at Lillis Albina Park in Portland. This multicultural festival has been North Portland's number one leader in bringing together the community with food, arts, and live music. And on Saturday, KBOO will broadcast live from the festival from 2 to 10 p.m. Again, that's the 24th Annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Festival, Friday, June 24th through Sunday, June 26th at Lillis Albina Park. More information about Good in the Hood can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the United Kingdom has chosen to leave the European Union.
Tests in some older OHSU buildings have revealed water fountains with elevated lead levels.
And the City of Portland and Multnomah County are creating a joint office of homeless services.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 24th, 2016. I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. Decades after joining the European Union, voters in the United Kingdom have opted to leave. FSRN's Andrew Connolly reports from London.
The vote was tight, but Leave won with 52% to Remain's 48. The pound dropped to its lowest level since 1985. The country is now in a constitutional crisis, and Prime Minister David Cameron has already announced his resignation.
I'm very proud and very honoured to have been Prime Minister of this country for 6 years. I believe we've made great steps, with more people in work than ever before in our history, with reforms to welfare and education, increasing people's life chances, building a bigger and stronger society, keeping our promises to the poorest people in the world, and enabling those who love each other to get married, whatever their sexuality. But above all, restoring Britain's economic strength. And I'm grateful to everyone who's helped to make that happen.
The vote exposed deep demographic fractures in the country. The provincial working class shouted to leave. The urbanites university graduates begged to stay. Those who wanted Brexit the least will have to live with it the longest, as three-quarters of 18 to 24-year-olds voted to remain. Largely a plebiscite on migration policy, areas with large immigrant populations also voted to stay. Britain is the first to leave the EU, but may well not be the last. Within hours of the result, right-wing populist leaders Marine Le Pen of the Front National in France and Geert Wilders of the Freedom Party in the Netherlands both announced their hopes for similar referendums. Meanwhile, the majority in Scotland voted in favour of staying in the EU. Seizing the opportunity, First Minister Nicola Sturgeon said a second referendum on Scottish independence will certainly be on the table. Northern Ireland also showed strong pro-EU sentiment, and Sinn Féin chairman Declan Kearney has reopened the debate on reuniting the North with the Republic of Ireland. And thousands have even taken to Twitter, demanding that London hold its own vote on independence. The European project has suffered the biggest defeat in its post-war lifetime. The coming months and years will see the tortuous disentanglement of the United Kingdom from Europe, and some say perhaps even disintegrate in the process. Andrew Connolly, FSRN, London.
The stunning British vote to exit the European Union has raised questions among political observers in the United States. Many are asking, could the same wave of anti-immigrant nationalism that drove much of the Brexit vote bring Donald Trump the presidency? Nigel Farage of the right-wing Nationalist Independence Party has been one of the most outspoken supporters of Brexit. Critics say, like Trump, he has played on the fears of millions of people whose incomes have stagnated since the Great Recession. In both cases, the principals advanced their positions by demonizing immigrants. And like Trump's unlikely capture of the Republican nomination, the British vote to exit the EU came as a surprise to leaders around the world. Most British opinion polls had predicted that the voters would choose to remain in the European Union. The clear and surprising victory by anti-immigrant advocates is proving to be a wake-up call for Democrats who have been heartened by Clinton's lead over Trump in opinion polls of late.
Are you going to vote for Hillary Clinton in November?
Yes. Yeah, I think the issue right here is I'm going to do everything I can to defeat Donald Trump.
That was Vermont Senator and Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders this morning on MSNBC, saying he will vote for presumptive Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton. Even though the senator did not go so far as to endorse Clinton, he did say he was, quote, pretty good at arithmetic. Sanders said his job now was to fight for the strongest possible platform and to urge his supporters to get involved in the political process at all levels.
The City of Portland and Multnomah County has announced the formation of a joint office of homeless services. The city and county have each agreed to contribute $15 million to the office, which will open on July 1st. Initial staffing will include 3 county employees from the Department of Human Services and 4 city employees from the Portland Housing Bureau. Ultimately, the office will house a total of 9 full-time employees. In the past, the city has provided services to homeless individuals, while the county has had a separate program to shelter homeless families, children, and survivors of domestic violence. The effort to combine these services, which has been under discussion for years, finally came together this week. As many as 4,000 men, women, and children in Multnomah County sleep on the streets, in cars, or in shelters each night. The objective of the Joint Office of Homeless Services is to move these individuals into permanent housing and to prevent others from becoming homeless in the first place.
This week's establishment of the Joint Office of Homeless Services may not be enough to prevent the sale of land that had been envisioned as a potential site for a homeless campus. The Bureau of Environmental Services owns the 14-acre Terminal 1 industrial property, and they hope to sell it for $10 million. Developers Dyke Dame and Homer Williams have eyed the riversite to build a 1,400-person homeless campus. City leaders like Mayor-elect Ted Wheeler and Housing Bureau Director and City Commissioner Dan Saltzman have spoken out in support of the campus. However, Portland City Commissioner Nick Fish oversees the Bureau of Environmental Services, and last week he released a lengthy memo outlining his opposition to the property being used for a homeless project. The Bureau will start reviewing offers in about 30 days, at which point the land may be sold and eliminated as a possible homeless campus site.
A suspected militia terrorist with ties to Ayman Bundy and Lavoie Finicum has been arrested for attempting to blow up a Bureau of Land Management cabin in Arizona. William Keebler heads a citizen militia near Salt Lake City and was with the Bundy family for their armed standoff with federal agents in 2014. Keebler and his Patriots Defense Force militia say they scouted a Bureau of Land Management office in downtown Salt Lake City, but decided on bombing the rural cabin rather than committing a terrorist act near an urban shopping mall that had a homeless population. Keebler was accompanied by Lavoy Finnegan to scout out the bombing target. Finnegan was shot and killed by FBI agents after joining Ayman Bundy and others in leading the Malheur refuge occupation. Bundy is one of 26 people indicted on federal conspiracy and weapons charges after the 41-day armed occupation of BLM property in Burns, Oregon. In Portland on Thursday, Bundy's personal armed bodyguard became the fifth defendant to plead guilty. The guard, Wesley Kerr, has been sentenced to 6 months of home detention and has agreed to give up all the guns and ammo seized from him by the FBI.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Portland weather, partly cloudy tonight with a low of 55. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 78. And tomorrow night will be mostly clear with a low of 58. Today in history. In 1957, the United States Supreme Court ruled that obscenity is not protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution, which guarantees free speech and freedom of the press. Upholding a conviction under a California statute for publishing pictures of nude and scantily clad women, the court ruled that lawmakers could ban material, quote, utterly without redeeming social importance, or in their words, material that, to the average person applying contemporary community standards, the dominant theme of the material taken as a whole appeals to the prurient interest. The quote of the day is from Larry Flint. He said, "You have to be able to tolerate what you don't necessarily like so you can be free."
It's 5:11, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
If bigger is better, as the old saw claims, does that mean that biggest is best? Not in corporate world. Chanting the bigger is better mantra, corporations have constantly been merging to become global Goliaths. As we consumers have learned from banks, airlines, etc., far from getting better, the giants just become bullies. So let's pay attention to another creature, wanting us to swallow an extra sour serving of conglomeration is good for you hokum. You used to know what you were getting when you said to the bartender, "Make mine a Bud." But Budweiser has mutated into a multinational corporate concoction that's headquartered in Belgium, largely owned by South Americans, and now renamed Anheuser-Busch InBev Inc. It's already the world's largest brewer, but InBev is presently demanding that our government officials ignore their duty to the public and let it take over SAB Miller, the world's second largest brewer. Beer quaffers of the world, unite! If approved, this bitter deal would confront you with a monopolistic monster of a cartel with dozens of beer brands, including top sellers like Bud, Michelob, Corona, Stella Artois, Modelo, Miller Lite, Blue Moon, Foster's, and Mickey's. The InBev combine would control some two-thirds of all U.S. beer sales, as well as nearly a third of the entire global beer market. Pulling in an estimated $64 billion in revenues each year, this behemoth of brews would be able to crush all other competitors with predatory pricing schemes or simply buy them out. This is Jim Hightower saying, we beer aficionados would be left with a choice between corporate beer and corporate beer, with InBev setting the price and quality. This is a Teddy Roosevelt trust-busting moment. To support consumer choice and the thousands of independent craft brewers that InBev intends to kill off, go to brewersassociation.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
This Saturday, the Central Oregon LGBT community celebrates Pride. The festival has taken on notes of grief and an increased sense of awareness of safety for LGBT Oregonians in the wake of the shooting in Orlando, Florida. Layla Yao of KBOO News, in conjunction with the Oregon News Service, has more.
This Saturday, Bend is hosting the 12th annual Central Oregon Pride Celebration. The festival celebrates the LGBT population of Central Oregon. Although the community is smaller than in some other areas of Oregon, the first Central Oregon Pride Celebration drew 35 people in 2004. Festival Director Paige Matthews says that she expects a big turnout this year and excitement from people to show their pride.
A piece of it is showing our own community that we live here. That's a really big part, especially in a predominantly rural community.
Matthews expects around 5,000 people from Bend and rural parts of Central Oregon to attend. In light of this month's fatal shootings at a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida, the event will have increased security. Matthews says the shooting adds a level of sadness to the celebration, but has also reminded the LGBT community of the festival's importance.
The point of Pride has always been this, which is to come out and get excited and celebrate in the face of grief or sadness or, you know, the reasons we've always had to come together. It's just kind of a reminder of why we've always done this.
This weekend is also the anniversary of the Supreme Court decision that required all states to recognize same-sex marriages. While Matthews is happy about the decision, she says in some cases, legal equality has moved faster than equality in daily life.
Are people safe when they go to the bathroom? Are people safe kissing their partner in public? Are people safe holding each other's hands? It's that lived equality piece that we're still working on.
Central Oregon Pride takes place from noon to 6 on Saturday in Drake Park. For KBOO News, I'm Layla Yao.
In response to recent news about lead in Portland school water fountains, Oregon Health and Science University has initiated a sweeping campaign to test its water fountains for lead contamination after years of relying on utility testing reports. The OHSU campus has some 100-year-old buildings and across the campus found six water fountains with high lead levels. The highest level was six times above the EPA's action level for dangerous lead. Each of the flagged fountains has now been closed. OHSU has decided not to inform patients or families because the closed fountains were not in areas frequented by building visitors. On Wednesday, the staff were notified by email of the closures. Officials at OHSU believe the lead contamination to be a result of out-of-date brass components and fixtures, which leach lead into sitting water. Their conclusions are similar to those of the Portland Public School officials.
Lentz School's main office has been vented 24 hours a day, but it still gives off dangerously high levels of radon. Lentz is one of 15 schools around Portland running a second round of radon tests after 90 rooms tested above the danger threshold in the first round. School officials in Portland's only public school east of I-205 announced yesterday they've moved the main office to another room in the school. The second round of tests school-wide showed that numerous rooms had tested high or extremely high in the first round are now safe. Last week, Alliance High had to close its cafeteria because its second round of testing showed dangerously high radon levels. Radon inhalation exposure is estimated to be linked to up to 22,000 lung cancer deaths every year in the U.S.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Following a day of multiple protest rallies in the streets, what's next for the Chicago Teachers Union and their battle to fully fund Chicago schools? CTU Vice President Jesse Sharkey says both the union and the community are engaged in a struggle to defend and fully fund public education in Chicago, and cuts to education are unacceptable.
If they try to come to us with cuts, we'll strike against those cuts. We'll strike to defend the schools if it comes to that in the fall. So, you know, at which point they're going to have a difficult choice, which is that if they want the schools to open, they want the city to function with public schools, they're going to have to figure out a way to fund it. We are not going to sit idly by and watch them cut the schools to ribbons.
Sharkey says Governor Bruce Rauner's bid to impose his agenda on the state legislature by blocking a state budget is an impediment
to finding a funding solution for Chicago schools.
Yeah, that's a real impediment. I think what it means for ROM and the local, you know, Chicago elite is that they're not the people who are calling the shots. They're really stuck in the middle, and they're stuck in the middle between a public and a union that wants schools preserved and doesn't want to see cuts, and a governor who is not interested in helping solve the problem at all.
Allina Health is spending an estimated $25 million on scab workers during the nurses' strike there, more money than Allina says it will save by demanding nurses change their health care plans. Allina has said it expects to save $10 million by forcing nurses to go to an inferior health plan with higher deductibles and out-of-pocket costs. Nurses say they're striking over health care, staffing issues, and the quality of patient care. More than 6,000 Atlantic City casino workers will strike July 1st if no agreement is reached on a new contract. The workers represented by Unite Here, including at Trump Taj Mahal, want a pay raise above their current average of just $11.74 an hour. According to Unite Here, the workers have given up more than $40 million through wage freezes and benefits cuts over the past 5 years. The union says Atlantic City casinos are flush with their best year in nearly a decade. In total, a $2.5 billion a year business.
Brought to you by Union Active, your certified iOS and Android mobile app developer, offering high-quality, union-made mobile apps backed by a support team which upgrades your product to every new mobile operating system. Features, pricing, and examples are online at unionactive.com. Workers Independent News is proud to be heard on The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Live nationwide weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. at theunionedge.com.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
A teachers' union protest in southern Mexico has intensified after federal police used deadly force to clear highway blockades in the state of Oaxaca last Sunday. At least 9 people were killed, all of them civilians, all by gunfire, making the police action one of the deadliest directed against Mexican protesters in decades. Shannon Young of Free Speech Radio News reports from Oaxaca City.
When some 800 federal and state police moved in to clear a week-old partial blockade along a highway in the town of Nochitlan, something went terribly wrong. Just what depends on who you believe. Teachers and supporters at the blockade, as well as unaffiliated townspeople, say the police opened fire without warning. Federal and state police initially denied bringing firearms or even riot control batons to the scene. When photographs and video emerged showing police not only armed but aiming their guns in shoot-to-kill positions, the National Security Commission issued a written statement denying the authenticity of the images. After journalists from national and international agencies claimed authorship and even shared metadata from the images, the official story changed again. Mexico's federal police chief Enrique Galindo told the media Monday that agents had come under fire when trying to disperse the protest and were forced to respond with their work-issued weapons. All of the at least 9 dead are civilians. State authorities say one person died as a result of mishandling bottle rocket fireworks, but multiple sources, including medical personnel, say the individual died of a gunshot wound. Early breaking news reports suggested there was at least one police fatality, and a state government press release indicated 8 police were wounded by gunfire. The Associated Press later retracted its anonymously sourced claim of a police fatality, and state officials have since been silent about police injuries. Isaac Torres, head of Oaxaca's chapter of the Mexican Human Rights Defense League, says the reports were intended to paint extrajudicial killings as self-defense.
The only thing they're seeking is to confuse sane judgment and public opinion in order to justify, or rather to continue to justify, the deployment of armed forces in Oaxacan territory.
If Sunday's police operation was aimed to weaken and isolate the protesting teachers, it backfired in a major way.
Barricada de Nochixtlán!
Thousands of people quickly took to the streets in Oaxaca City Monday, condemning the violent crackdown. By Wednesday, public sector healthcare workers were also supporting the teachers in their own nationwide protests. Healthcare workers are also opposing a recent set of reforms, saying public health is jeopardized, but until now had kept their protests separate from those of the teachers. This week also brought the largest march in recent memory of indigenous Mijes through a string of rural towns in their ancestral territory. At the State University, sympathetic students took over the college radio station Sunday. They're still broadcasting a steady stream of phone calls coming in from across its large broadcast footprint and even from Oaxacans listening online in the United States. Oaxaca City's sizable and close-knit community of local artists, musicians, and cultural promoters also closed ranks with the teachers. Ruth Orozco is a cultural promoter and participated in an improvised street festival one day after the events in Nochitlán.
When the teachers' union had its hand extended, asking for dialogue, the government responded with riot batons, tear gas, and death. As a cultural guild, we should also organize ourselves in a way to confront this situation.
Wednesday, the negotiations that teachers have been demanding since mid-May finally began, and follow-up talks are set to resume Monday. But the blockades authorities intended to clear in the crackdown have only grown in size. Shannon Young, FSRN, Oaxaca City.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imamc.org for Thursday, June 23rd, 2016. Israel troops attack and injure two Palestinian workers in addition to kidnapping civilians during home searches in the West Bank. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Palestinian medical sources have reported that two workers were injured on Thursday morning after Israeli soldiers assaulted them near Bethlehem while trying to enter occupied Jerusalem for work. The sources said that the two workers are from the Ru'badiyya town east of Bethlehem and have been identified as Muhammad Jamil Radaida, 22, and Jihad Jamil Radaida, 21. The soldiers chased and assaulted them in Wadi Abu al-Hummus area near the Al-Khaz village east of Bethlehem. The army claimed that the two workers were trying to enter Jerusalem without permit. The two were repeatedly hit and kicked by the soldiers and suffered various fractures, cuts and bruises to different parts of their bodies and were transferred to Beit Jala Governmental Hospital, suffered moderate injuries. It is worth mentioning that Wadi Abu al-Hummus area became a site for repeated Israeli military assaults against dozens of workers, including some who were recently shot and injured. In other news, the Palestinian Prisoner Society, PPS, managed on Thursday to obtain an acquittal for an imprisoned Palestinian child who was kidnapped by the Israeli army 45 days ago as he was returning home from school. PPS lawyer Ella Theodori said that the acquitted child, Abdullah Qasim, 15, from the Central West Bank district of Ramallah, was kidnapped on May 12 while heading back home from school. He added that the Israeli military prosecutors based its allegations on testimonies of soldiers who abducted the child after claiming he hurled stones on their military jeep, but were inconsistent with their statements. The court decided to keep the child imprisoned for two more days to give the military prosecutors time to determine whether to file an appeal. In other news, the Palestinian Prisoner Society, PPS, has reported that Israeli soldiers have kidnapped early on Thursday at least 10 Palestinians in different parts of the occupied West Bank, including occupied Jerusalem. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was a Thursday, June 23, 2016, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Layla Yao, David Kesters, Emery Mort, and Lisa Loving. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, more talk radio with Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Barbara Bernstein hosts Locus Focus, a weekly program about our place on the planet. At 11, on disability awareness, Grace Reed speaks with Alan De La Torre, research associate at Portland State University's Institute on Aging, and Tracy Morgan, project manager at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. They'll talk about their research on seniors and people with disabilities. And at 11:30 on Voices for the Animals, Dab Stedman talks with Seth Tibbett, the founder and chairman of the Tofurky Company, about the development of Tofurky, the first plant-based meat alternative to a turkey dinner sold commercially in the U.S. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not yet a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. And now stay tuned for Counterspin, followed by Bread and Roses. Andre Gide said,